Better policing initiatives. What's already being put into place in the city's biggest police force? Plus, one of the oldest children's theater in the country adapts to COVID-19 in the cities. It's been a rallying cry across the country to improve policing minority communities. While some call for wholesale changes and defunding police forces, others are looking for the improvements that are needed to eliminate systemic racism on the force. What is the city's biggest city doing right now and into the future? We talked one-on-one with Davenport Mayor Mike Mattson and Davenport Police Chief Paul Sikorski. Thank you both for joining us. And Mr. Mayor, you heard even at a recent city council meeting, some citizens saying defund the police force. Is that even being under consideration?
So Jim, no, not really, no. So I don't necessarily know exactly what's being said by that other than I hear different versions. But I will take a moment and tell you that I've been working with this city government for 13 years, 12 as an alderman, and now you know I'm mayor. My experience with the police department, my experience with city administration is wonderful. I know that our officers, you know, every day wake up and go, how can I protect and how can I serve the community? Certainly we are constantly reviewing everything we do, no matter if it's the police department or whatever. We have an outside agency every few years come in and reaccredit our police department. It is an accredited national organization. I am constantly talking with the chief, our city administrator, Ms. Spiegel, everyone else about what we do, how we can do stuff better. It's an ongoing thing that, at least in my experience, has been going on forever. And I've talked and had the pleasure of working with many officers in our police department. And what I know as mayor is that when they go to work every day, whatever shift they're on, they're thinking, how can I work with this community? How can I do better? Having said that, I love that the chief always is looking for better ways to do different things. But some of the things that have been talked about, our organization already has those in place. We have written policies on use of force. Davenport, our police department, and our staff asked for body cameras. The officer that goes out in the community and interacts has a body camera and it's used. We proactively look forward to doing better, and we've been doing that for years. Certainly now, if people have productive ideas for what we do or what the police force does, myself and the chief are always open to talking with those folks about how to do better. Recently, I met with the leader of the NAACP, Lou Lack, and Churches United. I talked with the schools just yesterday. We're always having conversations on what people think are important, how can we do better. And I just want to say that the police officers in Davenport are a professional, mature organization. We have training programs after the academy before we allow our officers to go out on the street that they have to go through, and our folks have to kind of validate that they're ready to do that job. And they are doing, heck, if I was other organizations around this country, I would have them come look at Davenport's police department so that they can take what we do to their communities.
Well, Chief, as you well know, I mean, other cities have great programs. I mean, there are programs, of course, in Minneapolis and in Atlanta and in smaller cities and larger cities as well. Are you worried that all it takes is just one bad incident that could really light a powder keg?
Well, I think any incident, I mean, we've seen that around the country, any incident involving police can have that effect around the country. And that's what we're experiencing right now around this nation. And we are here in our community, too. So, you know, that's why it's imperative that we as a police department, as a professional organization, that we continue to evaluate what we're doing, how we're doing it, what our policies say, and what our operations are as well. It's imperative that we have great open relationships and community with our community. And continue those. You know, the mayor talked a little bit about our ongoing review process. We're continuously looking at what we do and how we do it and how we can improve as well.
There's been a lot of criticism about the police use of chokeholds and that may be banned nationwide. You're saying that in Iowa, it's considered deadly force and it has to be greatly justified. And also that your officers have a duty to intervene if they see something else being done wrong by another officer. Those are pretty key parts of your program, right?
They are, and it is key for law enforcement. And I think one of the good things that has potential to come about from this is consistency and application in law enforcement throughout the nation. And right here in our state of Iowa, it is important that we communicate what we do and how we do it. You talked about the use of chokeholds. Yes, in the state of Iowa and in our police department, it's a deadly force type of encounter that the officer has to be involved with. And that means saving his or her own life or the life of somebody else. Bringing a consistency in application, bringing consistency in policy is one of those good things that could come about from this.
Well, and Mr. Mayor, the other important thing I think that you'd like to underline is the fact that you have to have open lines of communication with the citizenry as well as the minority portion of Davenport. Is there going to be more toward that, more to be done in the coming weeks?
Yes, sir. So almost every day I'm talking with someone, some leader of the community, especially our minority community. Done that as alderman, and we want to have that dialogue. We had lunch just Monday. Larry Robertson, the president of NAACP, Jasmine Newton Butt, the president of LULAC, Pastor Grimes, a leader in the Churches United, Bob Gallagher, Mayor Bettendorf, Tony Kenobi, the chairman of the supervisors for Scott County. We had lunch over in our building there, and with the understanding, a lot of people were pushing me to have an agenda. What are we talking about? It was simply a listening session. I think our job right now, as in many opportunities with the community, is to listen to them, try and get their perspective, and then think about productive dialogue that will lead to improve situations or improve policies.
Chief, let me ask you this. You're pointing out that in the city of Davenport, there have been 107,000 calls for police assistance in a period of 1 year, and less than 0.5% of that used any type of force. I mean, I think that's kind of a point that sometimes gets lost.
It is, and one of the reasons that I bring that forward is, you know, there's the discussion on de-escalation training. And our perspective is that's a great use of training time. We do that. We've done it for some time now. And as you can see from that statistic, it works. 107,000 calls for service and any kind of use of force in less than 0.5% of the time here in our city. I think it's evidence-based. It just shows that what we're doing works.
There is also, as you well know, Chief, is that there are nationwide efforts, political efforts, mostly in Congress right now, of course, but you'll probably see something on the state level that could create new mandates, new laws, new regulations. Is that welcome to get a federal input on this? In other words, is the federal government kind of dictating what might be better served as a local issue?
Well, I'll tell you, I think what we need in our profession right now is some standardization in training and in policy. I think that can be done at the state level. I think the state has started some action with that here in Iowa. But the training and policies really vary throughout the nation. One thing that we have found here in Davenport that has really helped us with that, and that's having outside eyes looking at our policies and our training, and that is accreditation through CALEA. And that's a national and international program where we have to get reaccredited now every 4 years, but every year there is a review, and we're actually going through that right now in the midst of all of this. In July, that'll happen for us. And that's really outside eyes, professionals looking at what we have for policies, We have to update policies sometimes, but they're also looking at practices and procedures, and are we really doing what our policies say as well? So, you know, I think that standardization is important. How that happens, you know, I think that can and should happen at the state level. But if the federal government gets involved with that, you know, I think that it brings a professionalization to our law enforcement profession.
Well, and Chief, as you well know, I mean, we are already at the city of Davenport actively involved with the federal government with the Department of Justice program that is trying to work on eliminating or at least greatly reducing a violent crime in the city. How do you see that partnership working so far now that you've been a number of months into it?
That's a great question. I'm actually glad you brought it up. We had a conference call this morning, a national conference call with our partners from the Department of Justice and the Public Safety Partnership. And this, you know, the great thing about that is we're talking about current trends that are happening right now. Every 2 weeks we have a conference call and we talk about what's going on right now and our progress in the program. We talked about what's happening around the nation, how other departments and cities and municipalities are handling everything that's going on with protests, with riots, and how that relates to violent crime in our communities as well. A few of the things that we have been involved in, you know, they have reflected that that's been the best practice from throughout the United States, and where they have seen less violence in the communities handling the protests the way we do here in Davenport.
Well, and Chief and Mr. Mayor, I want to ask you this as well, is that there's such a huge difference between some of the peaceful protests. As the Chief had pointed out, we want to protect your First Amendment rights. We want to hear from you. You said that at one of the rallies. And Mr. Mayor, you look at what happened after one of the peaceful rallies during Memorial Day weekend going into June 1st that turned into violence. Were you actually somewhat shocked at what unfolded in the early hours of June 1st?
Are you talking about here in Davenport or nationally, or Jim?
Yes, yeah, in Davenport, where we had a number of incidents throughout the city, as well as the shootings that killed two people and injured one police officer.
Right, so as I said on the 5 a.m. Press conference with folks that early morning of Monday after the Sunday concerns, I'll walk with, stand with, help our police department on the first protest we had that moved from LeClaire up to the county courthouse. They helped with traffic. Anytime someone wants to come to our community and peacefully protest, I'll stand with you. The Chief and I were there in Vandeveer. Having said that, if you want to come to our community and cause harm or damage, we're going to use every ability legally to make sure our citizens and our communities protected. Those are two different things. Peaceful protest, you're right, I support it, I'll be with you, and we'll do what we can to make sure you have what you need to be in a peaceful protest situation. As you've heard me say many times, Jim, safe, stable, and welcoming community. The safe part, don't think you can come here and hide behind peaceful protesters and cause harm. We're going to use every tool we have to make sure that as best as we can, you're not able to do that.
So, Mr. Mayor, you're saying that for the most part, you believe that what happened later on that night might have been more from outside sources than from Quad Cities?
No, we think many of them were people from around here that were not intended to be peaceful protests. They were not concerned about the injustice that happened and the tragedy that happened with Mr. Floyd. They were simply concerned about harming our community and causing disruption and hurting our police officers. That is not any type of okay thing to happen. We're going to stop that. We're going to do what we can to make sure our community is safe. And they were not part of the peaceful protest. They were just here to cause harm.
Chief, let me ask you about that particular night, because it wasn't just a random thing. It was going on not in one isolated location, but throughout parts of Davenport. And then you have the ambush of police officers, which is virtually unheard of in the Quad Cities. What have you taken from that June 1st series of incidents?
There's a lot going on with that question, because we and I have taken a lot from that. One of the things I'll tell you is that we had an incredible amount of support from other law enforcement entities around in our area, and we tackled that late night and early morning and into the next several days together as a law enforcement community, with great support from elected officials from throughout the Quad Cities and city administration. The other thing, you know, that really hurts from that whole incident is I think we really got to experience hate in our community and evil. And, you know, to have three police officers who were in working specifically because of the chaos and disruption that was going on with the looting and rioting. I will not call that a protest. They were in to protect our community, to protect our citizens of this city and in the Quad Cities, and to have individuals ambush them and try to kill all three of them. You know, that it's really a difficult thing to even replay in my head. And the officers, not just involved in that incident, but probably nearly 100 Davenport police officers that came in from home, got out of their warm beds to come in and help from that evening on throughout the next several days. You know, they're heroes in my mind. They left their families to do that. And you know, I just owe a great deal of gratitude to them.
Well, and the community, I don't know how much of an outpouring of support you've gotten from the community, but I wonder if when you're seeing people rallying, saying things about the police department, and you're trying to get new recruits, do you think it's going to be more difficult, Chief, to get new recruits into police departments and perhaps Davenport in particular?
Yeah, these kind of things absolutely have an effect on that, and we're actually going through our testing process right now, right in the midst of all this, and you know, surprisingly, the numbers have been pretty consistent with this process as they have been throughout the last couple of years, and I'll tell you, as far as support goes, Jim. Our community has really shown an outpouring of support for our police officers. I think the vast majority of our community supports and really, I think, understands the general complexities of the job that we're called to do, that we graciously do. We do it because it's in our heart, it's a passion. And I think our community understands that, they get it. And that support is so greatly appreciated, because it's a difficult time right now. I know we're gonna get through it. I'm optimistic that we as a police department, but even more so, we as a community, I think we're gonna be better. I think we're gonna come through. I think we're going to look at addressing things, not just in police work, but I think as a community, I think we can get better and deal with inequities in our educational system. I think we can deal with inequities in poverty and with housing and many, many different things. And the mayor talked about community leaders coming together to talk about and to deal with all of those things that, in my mind, you know, complicate matters and really are causes of the disproportionate contact with law enforcement.
Davenport Mayor Mike Mattson and Police Chief Paul Sikorski joining us. In a moment, the Junior Theater still has plans for your children this summer, but first, standing up and being counted for the 2020 census, it's continuing in the cities and all across the nation.
The census counts everyone in this country, and that really means everyone. A hospital patient, yes, that person counts. Newborn Benjamin, yeah, little Ben now counts. Two families that live in the same house, sure thing, they all count. Or David, who's living in his cousin Daniel's garage, he also counts. The census counts everyone to make things better for all of us.
Why should I care about the 2020 census?
Every 10 years, the census counts everyone living in the U.S.
Count everyone living with you.
Even kids!
Our numbers help shape funding and services.
For all these things.
That's a lot of stuff.
Your responses are safe and secure,
no matter who you are or where you're from.
We have reasons to care.
Shape your future. Start here at 2020census.gov.
It's the nation's second oldest junior theater, and it's facing a new challenge, serving the children of the cities safely while they can still have a lot of fun. We sat down with the director of the Davenport Junior Theater, Daniel Sheridan, to talk about the changes in the program that still gets your children involved in something fun and educational. So how has the Davenport Junior Theater actually been able to adapt to COVID-19? It's been a very weird 3 to 4 months.
Yeah, it sure has. You know, it was, I think, March 16th, we were in the middle of our spring break camp when the whole program hit pause, like much in the Quad Cities. We had to cancel that camp and cancel our winter theater and dance classes and deal with refunding and communicating with those families. But, you know, within a week, the junior theater team, we sat down and we developed a two-prong approach. So the first one was getting out in the community with a new free learning channel. It's hosted through YouTube, but we have over 50 videos in theater, dance, lessons, tours, performances, stuff that kids could access immediately, regardless of their financial status. We just wanted that to be available for kids. And then the second thing we started developing was our in-person Zoom virtual classroom setting. So we ended up launching our virtual program this June, 4 weeks session, and we had 336 kids enroll for that, and we had over 40 classes running right now. So it's been great to stay in touch with those kids and give them an artistic outlet and continue to get to do the thing that they love at a distance.
Well, and what's amazing about the virtual program that you were telling me is that, I mean, it doesn't have walls, as everyone knows, but that means you can reach from coast to coast in America, not just along the Mississippi River.
Yeah, that was one of the really surprising things to us. We had our first student enroll from Studio City, California, and we were wondering who that was, and it turned out to be a former junior theater alum who grew up in the Quad Cities. And then we had people from Hebron, Kentucky, Seattle, Washington, Orlando, Florida, and then even more locally, Cedar Rapids. And so it opens the scope of what we do to a regional and national audience. And that's been fun to have those kids and families with us there in the classroom and getting the chance to interact with students from around the country.
Now, as you said, the first 4 week virtual program has come and gone for the most part. What's being offered from this point on?
Yeah, so we are getting all prepped for our second 4 week program. That's going to be launching on July 6th. So it's a 4 week program in July. And one of the exciting things about the revamp into the virtual space is typically our sessions are 10 to 12 weeks long. So when you're doing a 4 week session, it shakes up everything you're doing. So not only are we doing things like acting and ballet and hip hop and musical theater, all those things we've done before, we're now able to shift gears in the 4 week setting and do things like voiceover and acting for the camera, diving into tone up, work it out, drop in dance classes. We're doing just a wider array of specialty options, and those have proven particularly popular with the kids.
Well, let's be honest, that's a great idea, because if you think about it, when it comes to acting instruction, it's so give and take, it's so personal, it's so face to face that you would think that you would lose that through the virtual teaching.
Yeah, and you know, that's one thing that maybe people don't realize. What we've done at Junior Theater is we've created 4 complete virtual classrooms. Each virtual space is in our acting studios, so our kids feel like they're there in the class. We have 3 different cameras that the teachers switch through and interact from, so the kids feel like they're moving and seeing their teacher in a different way. We also have navigators, which are some of our older students who are the ones behind the scenes in the classroom. They're serving and helping us switch from camera to camera. So that way it still feels like you're in a classroom. A lot of people have had this Zoom experience where you're just one person talking for a long period of time. This is way more interactive and way more dynamic. So that's something students can expect at Junior Theater and under any circumstance.
And if they're interested, they can go to your website, but perhaps do it sooner rather than later, because you have programs that are starting very soon.
We do, yeah. Like I said, July 6th is the launch of the next program, and with the popularity of the June program, we filled over 18 different classes. Now, full for us, we keep those class sizes small. You know, we're talking, on average, 8 students in the class. We're sticking to that because we still want to get to know every child. We don't want to pack 20 or 30 kids in a room. So definitely get registered, because we're keeping the program tight and serving the students.
And when do you hope to get back on the stage? What's your best estimate right now?
Oh, wow. You know, that's a really good question. I mean, everybody knows everything is shifting around. So, for instance, next season, this fall, we haven't decided if we're going to do virtual programming, in-person programming, or a blend. We're designing our next main stage series to be one that could be on the stage or take place in the Zoom platform with flexible cast sizes, keep it to a cast of 6 or expand it to a cast of 20. It's all about adaptability right now and creativity. So we are making those decisions as late as we can with enough time to let the public know.
That's Daniel Sheraton, the director of the Davenport Junior Theater. Although Iowa and Illinois businesses are quickly starting to reopen, we know that the closures and the disruptions, all the changes in your life, can be tough to handle. So in many ways, we want you to know you are not alone. If you feel overwhelmed, reach out to the Robert Young Center or Unity Point Trinity Health in the Illinois Quad Cities, or the Vera French Center and Genesis Health in the Iowa Quad Cities. Helplines are open right now for you, and they stay open 24/7. Or just type crisis hotline in Google to find a helping hand, a friendly voice, a safety net near you to get you through these difficult times. On the air, on the radio, on the web, and on your mobile device, thanks for taking some time to join us as we talk about the issues on the cities.